right here, right now. Every day, CIUT 89.5, the sound of your city. Toronto.
This program is sponsored by A Different Book List. Located at 779 Bathurst Street, A Different Book List is an African-Canadian-owned bookstore specializing in the rich literature of African and Caribbean diaspora and the Global South. For more information, visit www.adifferentbooklist.com.
Good morning and welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto. And I'm Phil Taylor, your host. Today we're going to be talking really about a number of issues developing around the world. Try to focus on some of those most likely to explode, as it were. Particularly, we have some things to say about news, I would say, about Venezuela. There's also some news concerning Rwanda. But I guess to begin with, we really want to show solidarity with people of Minnesota who, bless their hearts, are fighting to shut down the Trump intimidation exercise of flooding the area with their state with ICE agents. And it really does take people on the streets, frankly, because almost every other body, elected representatives and whatnot, really scramble around to sort of create a little niche for themselves as being the virtuous ones. But it takes a kind of reaction of ordinary healthy people who do not like to see children abused by men in balaclavas with badges and guns, and also people who recognize their basic humanity and they don't believe that the function of the state, the soldiers or the police, is to become prosecutor, judge, jury, and to decide on people's lives. That's in face of a doctrine from the President of the United States, which he is, going back to Louis the 16th or whoever said it, he is the state. And all rights and powers really come from him. And Minnesotans clearly, faced with this, have chosen to support each other. And they don't make distinctions about, you know, how long have you been here? What color are you? What kind of accent, et cetera. They recognize one another's common humanity. And just a little signal to those who have power, that idea of equality became into being a century or two back, and they haven't been able to get rid of it. All of our rulers really do think that people can be manipulated and pushed around and conned, but and patronized, all of which leads to a very healthy reaction from people who understand worldwide now that we're a human family. And when people try to divide us, particularly using the methods of a man like Trump, who has already put his cards on the table that he's a white power person. He told, when he was at Davos, he said, "I'm Scottish. My mother's 100% Scottish, and my father's 100% German," which makes the rest of humanity laugh at him. Because He's a wonderful representative of several centuries back, and humanity has been moving on. But, of course, there's people like himself who he's also green, that is the color of the American dollar, and he thinks that's the most important thing. If you have dollars, you don't need people. As I remember being at an emergency at an airport, and a friend of mine was rescued because he had an emergency, and the guy who organized it got him to the hospital. He said, it's either you have friends or you have money. He says, because that's otherwise you're in bad trouble. So humanity was awakened to the idea. That's something I really urge all listeners, Taylor Report and wherever, to keep in mind liberty, equality, fraternity, and the French Revolution and the world impact it had. It's always a good idea, even though we're the Anglo sphere of the world. Rousseau, Voltaire, Diderot, all contributed mightily, and they simply attacked using the obvious fact that that it, given the opportunity, all peoples everywhere are capable of self-rule, of course, and are capable of science and culture, and the idea that that these things, what we call, some of our leaders call Western civilization, all that, is created by humans. And it was just a flash of a revelation, and it's one that stays with us even now, that we understand that we are equal. We have rights, and there aren't lords and others, and we have the names, and I don't know why we can't get rid of them, dukes, duchesses, etc., all those awful things. But the idea is equality is winning the day, but it remains a battle. But I would really urge everybody to look closely at the doctrines that float, that arose. Thomas Paine wrote The Rights of Man, which he meant, you know, we understand that this is not a gender matter. This is the rights of humanity. Once you break the surface with the concept, it'll take care of the little fevers that associate it. Paine was visited France after the French Revolution, and they made him a member of their assembly. They said, "Is Paine is here? Well, he can be one of us. Because he's one of those who believes in and has fought for equality, human equality." And he was one of the leaders of France, told him, "We think that there should be a statue of you in every village in the world." And that would be true. We should have statues that use the word liberty and equality words. They're not done here with it because we're still under the shade of a monarchy. And those words are offensive to the crown. Even though, you know, they're schizophrenic, they have a parliament and all that, but the language is troublesome to the crown because there isn't, but the concept of the crown is that it was appointed by God, so there's no human equality in that department. I'm going on and on about a point, which is that the people of Minnesota, Minneapolis, are showing their grit and courage, and truly courage, because the Trump doctrine, as a philosophy, is murderous. The armed agents, deadly deadly weapons, hair triggers, no training, little, no respect for anybody because they were given a badge. That is, it invites, unfortunately, tragically, it invites and causes martyrdom. The doctor or the medical man who went to the demonstration and was photographing the behavior of the federal agents was armed, and he was a perfect expression of what the National Rifle Association, Riflemen's Association, my father was a member. I used to read their magazines just so I could look at the guns, the rifles. At any rate, the National Rifle Association has always argued Americans have the right to keep and bear arms. And so this medical professional and decent human being who wanted to protect his neighbors was exercising his right to demonstrate and to also monitor the conduct of the ICE people. He had a weapon on him, but it was legal. He had all the papers and everything. It's exactly what Trump's home base makes a mantra that you get to have a weapon and you it's registered and all that, and that's your sacred right. Well, he ended up shot dead by the ICE people, and that was a moment where you had the complete paradox, you could say, I guess, of the Trump doctrine, because the people who hit the core of his and all right-wing support in the United States has always been towards people like Reagan and, in this case, Trump and Bush before. They all swore Americans, the Second Amendment to the Constitution is sacred. You have the right to have a gun. So to their dismay and shock, a guy who had one legally ended up dead. And so a couple of things emerged there. One is that they will kill you if you get in their way. And that was the message they were supposed to bring. When they first killed the woman, the reaction of the Trump administration was, well, too bad for them. See, we're doing our job, and she's in the way. She's a terrorist because she didn't immediately jump out of her car and prone out so that they could search her and stand on her back. She laughed, and so they killed her. And the idea at the White House was, you see, we'll shoot a few people, and they'll learn to get out of our way. But that isn't what happened. They shot a couple of people. There's going to be more, for sure. But they're finding that the people don't choose not to get out of their way. And people understand now that there is a martyr factor. You go anyway because you believe in something, and you have a right to do this, and they're forcing the hand of those who think they can get everything by intimidation. And so I think Trump is running into a rock. You may have noticed that these elections are all going against him, because the very people that he thought would always be with him and always saluting and always cheering are not so enthusiastic that his little golden dome on his head and in his brain is not panning out as the way he thought. Fortunately, he's very thick-headed, and he's going to continue to do that. So he'll be the author of his own downfall. It's like a drunk in a bar. Just get back and watch him. Sooner or later, he'll just fall asleep, and then you can haul him out of the building. This is the Taylor Report, CIT. As I said, we want to make a tribute to the Minnesotans who are fighting back, and at the cost of their lives, actually. This is, and I would remind them, there was an American who's supposed to be their hero, one of the great names, and whose name I forget, but who said, when the British caught him during the time of the American War of Independence, and they said, "You want to say anything?" before they hanged him, and he said, "I only regret that I have but one life to give for my country." Those people in Minnesota confronting ICE are in that tradition. They go in the street, and the authorities say, "What? You could get hurt," and they go in the streets anyway. So bless their hearts. This is we have Bruce Springsteen has. We're very glad is. Somebody, he's a celebrity worth his salt. He's come out with a very good song, and we'll play that now.
Through the winter's ice and cold, down Nicollet Avenue, a city aflame fought fire and ice neath an occupier's boots. King Trump's private army from the DHS, guns belted to their coats, came to Minneapolis to enforce the law, or so their story goes. Against smoke and rubber bullets, in the dawn's early light, citizens stood for justice, their voices ringing through the night. And there were bloody footprints where mercy should have stood, and two dead left to die on snow-filled streets, Alex Pretty and Renee Good. Or Minneapolis, I hear your voice singing through the bloody. Stranger in our midst. Here in our home they killed and roamed in the winter of 26. We'll remember the names of those who died on the streets of Minneapolis. Trump's federal thugs beat up on his face and his chest. Then we heard the gunshots, and Alex Pretty lay in the snow dead. Their claim was self-defense, sir. Just don't believe your eyes. It's our blood and bones, and these whistles and phones against Miller and Noam's dirty lies. Oh, I'm Minneapolis, I hear your voice crying through the bloody mist. We'll remember the names of those who died on the streets of Minneapolis. But they trample on our rights. If your skin is black or brown, my friend, you can be questioned or deported on sight. In our chance of ICE out now, our city's heart and soul persists. Through broken glass and bloody tears on the streets of Minneapolis. We'll take our stand.
Bruce Springsteen. And that struggle is going on. It'll be very interesting to see whether they can target other areas. The Trump administration trying to intimidate its opponents, to disrupt them. As the governor of that state pointed out, their attorney general, there are these great issues phony ones that Trump has been using to alarm the public and to frighten them and to try to create an atmosphere of hysteria and so that he can deploy federal agents. The governor has pointed out that Minnesota isn't a crisis area. If this were the doctrine made any sense, there would be other regions where this would be, they would be deploying. But as the Trump administration made clear, it's really just a convenient hammer to hit somebody with. So they thought they would hit Minnesota, and they intend to hit other places. I think the governor of California has been one of the remarkable standouts in terms of political leaders who actually are taking a principled position opposing Trump. He congratulated the prime minister on saying that that the U.S. is no longer exactly reliable, et cetera. And I guess the liberals in the United States are taking heart that there are governments around the world who are kind of pushing back. And I hope listeners have noticed that the liberal section of the American ruling groups is desperate to find friends. And so anytime they hear it, and I don't blame them, that they hear something like, well, Trump is, that the prime minister of Canada has actually offended the president, they find that encouraging, and I can understand that. But I want to get to his language. He said, you can't make deals with Trump. You can't make compromises with him. He says he is T-Rex. He is, and then he repeated it. He says he's T-Rex, and you either mate with him or he eats you. That's the governor of the largest state in the union, advising the world that they're dealing with something from the dinosaur period. Fairly accurate. The Taylor Report often talks about Rwanda because, as we've covered this talk for many years, actually, we've spoken to former ambassadors, we've talked to former UN personnel officers, and the story of Rwanda has always been mischaracterized. It's only, when it's talked about here by our principal journals and the documentary people, et cetera, it's always, the focus is all on events of 1994 and not mentioned or lost track of and rarely discussed in any depth is what was actually behind this. And from when it became a public issue, the armed struggle that took place in Rwanda beginning in 1990, October, if you look at it objectively, you'll see that the goal of the organization called the Rwanda Patriotic Front, which now governs the country autocratically, The general who led them was a Ugandan general. His name is Paul Kagame. He was a general, listen closely, he was a general in the Ugandan army when they attacked Rwanda in 1990. He was a general in the Ugandan army, and all the fighters under him were also soldiers of the Ugandan army. And the leader of Uganda at the time, and still the leader, Museveni, said he didn't know that, how that happened. He was surprised, which is tells you how much malarkey there is in the world, because of course he would have a rough idea where his generals are, mainly because he would not want to be shot by one of his generals, which is can happen. So he knew very well what they were doing. And the target of the invasion was not Rwanda per se, it was Congo. And today's Globe and Mail has a headline that says, "Mining disaster triggers claims of Rwandan looting." The RPF and its little friend, the M23, the demographic demographic picture would tell you that they have been in the Congo, Eastern Congo, since 1994. First, they captured power in Rwanda, and then they moved into Eastern Congo. And what is there? Well, it's called Coltan, and if you have a cell phone, you will you're part of the problem, as they say. The Coltan is in Eastern Congo, but we're getting it from Rwanda, and this disaster sort of highlights what it was all about. The object was to take from Congo its resources. All of those, as Trump negotiated clearly and specifically and openly most recently, all the mining in that area will come under the aegis of the United States. So I take the opportunity of this headline and this news. It's in the Globe and Mail today by Jeffrey York, who is actually one of the more readable journalists employed by the Globe. He's got himself a good subject, and he actually is factual, and he has called attention to this for many years. That it has no political ramifications at all, because Canada is cheek by jowl with Paul Kagame of Rwanda, as is the National Basketball Association. They might have separated themselves a little bit, but they've got a game going, pardon the pun, but the of promoting and establishing the hegemony of the army of this small country. And we even play the game here to the extent that the Canadian government and the American government, while they do complain a little bit, they grumble, but they've actually reinforced the Paul Kagame's power and his adventures. They've tolerated using M23 to attack, control Eastern Congo with a horrific number of casualties and cities destroyed. People, it's almost everybody in that region is a refugee. They all have their whatever belongings ready to go, and they have to run because the armies move in and around them. And there's been a fiction that they're there to chase the bad guys. So that would be the Hutu refugees from the War of 1994. That crime continues, and to underline this, what could you do? We could all be calling for the release from prison of Victoire Ingabire, who is living proof that there's no, not even a glimmer of democracy in the country. She was living in Belgium at the time of the fighting and the massacres of 94. And she, years later, she returned and as one who wanted to see all Rwandans represented or having the opportunity to have representation and to have fair elections. And she was arrested upon her return because she wouldn't agree to the mantra which keeps the RPF in power, which is that they're fighting the genocidaires and you have to, instead of them being Rwandans, they have this label. And it's, by the way, it's a slur against people to always, to it's a slur to condemn a people when you're actually talking about specific individuals or political organizations. But this is the way the RPF plays the game, and it has had Canadian support. And once in a while in our parliament, the cry goes up, we have to support a call for the freedom of this person or that person that lives, who is in another country and is politically in trouble. And no one in the Canadian Parliament has ever asked, why is it that Victoire Ingabire has served years in prison? And she has never been, there's no evidence that she was part of anything, any group other than one that says, let us have a election of that is conducted properly. By the way, Canada doesn't insist on, well, as they do in other countries, they want to be there and they want to monitor and they want to be sure that you're being democratic. They never say that about Rwanda. And that's because, I suppose, they want those minerals. There are Canadian mining companies involved in this massive exploitation of East Congo and of by the M23, the forces, the M23. But when they, as they periodically do, they want to make somebody an honorary citizen. And they talked about Mr. Lay, for example, in Hong Kong, who was a out-and-out Trump supporter, saying that only Trump could save Hong Kong, etc. Him, they want to give citizenship. But a woman that highly educated and professionally competent and experienced person, speaks many languages, Victoire Ingabire, she sits in a prison because she put her name forward or wanted to put her name forward. She's never been on a ballot. They won't allow it. So if you hear or if you see that your member of parliament and or they're all getting together, all the parties, and they'll always do it unanimously, they want to give honorary citizenship to somebody, tell them, if you're not going to fight for the honorary citizenship of Victoire Ingabire, or call for her release, don't raise the subject at all. It's a total hypocrisy. It's in bad taste. It's embarrassing. When we hear this crowing about the free world and our values, and we have nothing to say about her, Victoire Ingabire, having her rights denied and not being permitted to run, not being able to have a party. And meanwhile, we still remove people from Canada and deliver them into the hands of the RPF. So it's a disgrace. It's an open, embarrassing disgrace. And they had, and today's story about the mining disaster, here's the title, Mining Disaster Triggers Claims of Rwandan Looting. And I would say to Jeffrey York, thank you very much for writing the piece, but don't you notice that you're the only one doing it? Toronto Star is not doing it, I can tell you that. Toronto's, and you can forget the Sun and the Citizen and the National Post. They could care less, because deep in their DNA is that same arrogance as, let them suffer, we're going to benefit. Or as the British used to say, I'm all right, Jack. And so they, too bad for Victoire and Gabiri, too bad for those miners who died in hundreds. So this is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. It's 89.5 FM. There's some serious matters to talk about in regard to Venezuela, and we'll do that in a moment. But did we find Blind Willie Johnson? Here's a guy. Now listen, this is a religious song, but I think you might hear some political message in it. Let's play that.
Well, if I had my way, if I had a whole week to find, if I had a large ass building down, well, I don't want a woman, fine, fair, a pleasant look, a cold black hair. All the game though, sounds in mine. I first saw the woman, I look so fine. I went away Timothy, I can't tell. A daughter of Timothy, I play that well. I sound told his father, go in. If me Lord, if I had my way, well, if I had a wicked one, if I had a long time building down, well, replied to him, can't you find a woman of your kind and kin? Samson, will you please your mother's mind? Go and marry Fatty for last time. Let me tell you what, old Samson, well, it broke at the dawn, the lion run. Samson was the first man along the touch, because Satterline got up on his written that he killed a man with him. It's something that is hanging in the line of jaw. If I had my way, if I had a bigger one, if I had a long time down, well, you really please to tell it to me, how I need all the cane for me. Well, you really please to tell it to me, how strong all the cane for me. Time to get it on my hair after. Well, I'd be better, honey, in the lion hell. If I had my way, well, if I had, I'm a wicked one, if I had a long-time building down. So many thousand had the phone replied, and not many days old Sound was called. I find his hand was walking alone. I looked on the ground and found a little jawbone. He moved his own ropes up up like three. Got those blades three, down over dead alive. If I had my way, well, if I had a, I'm a wicked one, if I had a long-time building down. Well, Samson's sent for to never find out. Taylor began to wonder about. I tell his wife that I'm on his knee. I tell me why he's straight alive, happy will be. Samson, why she, you talk so fair. Told his wife to cut off his hair. Shave my head, clean it your hand. Well, if you come in, that's your man. If I had my way, well, if I had a wicked one, if I had a long time building down.
Black Willie Johnson. Legend has it that he was arrested because he was singing that song, and he was standing in front of a federal building, and somebody thought he was talking about the building. And I said it was a legend. I'm not a witness. He died because I do know that he had pneumonia from there had been a fire, and it was cold and rainy weather, and he caught pneumonia, and they wouldn't let him in a white hospital. So that was Blind Willie. But he got his licks in, didn't he? This is the Taylor Report, CIUT, 89.5 FM. So this story in Venezuela, is starting to get really engrossing. There's some I guess I'm the bearer of some news in the sense that there was a report on the weekend, and I shook my head thinking, oh, it's probably somebody, a rumor. But in fact, the Russian representative, I guess they're called ambassadors, to the United Nations, Vasily Nebenzia, gave an interview over the weekend, and I saw this at TASS. You can write the TASS, the word TASS, and that way you'll know what the Russians are thinking. It's okay. It's permitted that you get to think too. Most people self-censor. As Mark Twain said, Americans know they have freedom of speech and they know enough not to use it, because if you do, you'll be in trouble. So if they accuse Russia of something, you don't go and read what Russia says because you've already been told what Washington, Ottawa think, and therefore you know you can get yourself in hot water, right? So you're a smart boy. So TASS did interview this representative. What he had to say, I think, is shocking because let's contextualize this. He said that Maduro was betrayed. And he said everyone there is talking about it. And he said, the nasty, ugly context, I got to tell you, is he said this: they won't be able to do this in Cuba. So we're in a rough and challenging area. I would say to anybody with a conscience, not that there are very many such people, you know, around. I don't know what it is with them, but they have trouble surviving. But you have to understand what's going on here. He didn't accuse any specific person or leader, but he did. The fact that he used the word betrayed, that's heavy language. He basically indicated people in, I guess, the military and political leadership of Venezuela capitulated. Now this, I would call this politically a time bomb. This cannot go on. And meanwhile, we had this news that Delcy Rodriguez, who is the interim president and says that she's just the interim and that Maduro is the president, but she has, over the weekend, the news came that she is, they're going to be trading oil with India or doing business. Actually, she didn't get deep into it, but there were pictures of her and Modi, the Prime Minister of India, having a friendly talk. And if you separate that from what is being said by the Russian ambassador to the United Nations, these two things have not been linked, but Donald Trump linked them. He said that the Venezuela now will be selling oil, that India will be buying oil, his oil, Trump's oil, from Venezuela and not Iran. You have to read each of these stories separately to be able to put them together. But Trump has already commented on this friendly conversation that took place between India and Delcy Rodriguez, the interim president, as she's called, of Venezuela. It's going to have some ramifications, putting it mildly. And for Nebenzia to make that comment tells you that there's going to be, I would say, clearly Delcy's not going to like that. And so the place of Russia in relation to Venezuela could change dramatically, as also the relations with Cuba. And obvious, and Trump is looking for the removal of the government of Cuba, by the way, almost in a direct way. This doesn't seem to be a game of like the one they're playing with Iran, where they generate a story with very little actual substance of internal resistance, and that they have to do a rescue. In the case of Cuba, this is a blood feud with the Americans, because left, right, center of the American rulers, they will never forgive Cuba for having a truly popular revolutionary movement where the sovereignty of the country and the right to develop it in the interests of all the people of Cuba, that is just can't happen. And even, and it's been there, been successful for 66 years, but as with Haiti, it's never forgiven. Haiti's never been forgiven for having saved itself from empires, and of course, therefore, has to be punished. Incidentally, when everyone says, "Well, poor Cuba, you know, we have to really do something for them. We have to starve them. We have to use sanctions. We have to have blockades." That's helping them, of course. We should say to anyone who makes these ignorant arguments, well, you rescued Haiti, so how's that going? You've had Haiti, your hands on its throat, for more than a century now, and Marines have been in and out of Haiti. So for anybody who buys the bunk that, oh, if you could only remove the current political leadership there, that good things would happen. Quite the opposite. What will happen if they were to do it would be to devastate it. And Haiti has been, it's like a curse on them, because they broke the Western white power concept of how development should take place. But just to go back, yes, Vasily Nebenzia, I would urge everyone to look at the interview, because these things don't just happen. Somebody made the decision high up to bell the cat, as it were. And what's going to happen in Venezuela as a result of, I would say, just isolating Nebenzia and the Russian position, this is one you want to watch very closely, because I don't see how this cannot become a little more rancorous. As for Delcy Rodriguez, the other thing that was striking in the reports, and incidentally, these reports are separated from each other. Nobody's blending them, putting them all together. But Delcy Rodriguez's contact with India was organized by, of all people, Qatar. And Qatar is, as you know, is just a handful of oil monarchs who seem to be the number two or the best partner of Trump in the Middle East, and it turns out around the world that Qatar, how did Delcy end up talking to Qatar, and this be coordinated with India, where India will, according to Qatar's friend Trump, India will now get their oil from Venezuela, which is, Trump defines that as his oil. Remember, his priority is that Venezuela, which has been put on its back by sanctions, it will be paying off what it owes to the Americans. So before they worry about their own problems, they have to first pay off Donald Trump. But Qatar, and we've talked about this before, that Qatar is, when they're going to make an arrangement with, say, concerning Gaza, it's done at Qatar. And if you go to the, go back to how the Gaza business began, the political organization Hamas was financed from Qatar. And according to the two former prime ministers of Israel, the money, tons of it that was going into Gaza for political reasons was passed through the Israelis. So I hate to be super, what's the word, the conspiratorial, paranoid, but as every comedian has pointed out, even paranoids have enemies. Qatar is a spot where the business is done. And so when they say, well, we're going to do something to now bring about recovery, they call it, of Gaza, it'll be the meetings will all happen in Qatar. And the Americans can say, oh, don't look at me. We're there, but Qatar is doing this. In terms of Trump and Qatar, it's a good cop, bad cop, or bad cop and worse cop. So let's watch this story. But I do think it is highly significant that this broke into the open with a Russian representative talking about using the word betrayal of Maduro. And I want to go back to the terror factor, and it's going to be raised in the case of Iran, and it is being raised right now. Trump has actually advanced into a field which is relatively new, but seems to be a factor. Delcy Rodriguez has been quoted, and apparently there's discussions that she participated in prior to the removal of Maduro, where she said we were given 15 minutes and we were told we would be killed. Going to the President of the United States, he did speak of Delcy Rodriguez, and he said she better do what we are telling her to do, or she'll get the same treatment as Maduro, only worse. So that's the leader of the most powerful country, as he likes to say, on earth, certainly the most dangerous, threatening to murder. And we're getting the same now with the approaching attack on Islamic Republic of death threats. And we have people in the West, like our Prime Minister Carney and others, who talk about the rules-based order and all this. They do not say, do not do that. They do not say, do not threaten. That's you're in violation of the UN Charter. They don't say that. You know, the UN Charter says not just the use of force, the threat of the use of force, and then to take it to the higher level, the threat to literally assassinate the leader of another country. And that's the precipice on which we are resting. And the language is not strong enough, frankly, at the moment. We don't have principled leaders. I know we have leaders who talk about principles, but we don't have principled leaders. Because you're supposed to call, the only way to be safe is to call out to stand up and sort of point of order and say, well, this is the world order we agreed upon after defeating Nazism and Japanese fascism, militarism. We agreed on this charter. So we take the opportunity to stand at the United Nations and remind all members that a leader of a state cannot threaten to kill the leader of another state to get his way. We're not seeing that. So I think this needs to be called out because there's no use playing like, that Carney is being somehow now really stout and strong. He's being stout and strong for the Cold War and for NATO. The two things we should not have. What we should have is the world that we created after World War II, and knew we had to struggle to establish it. That is not what we're doing. You could say that Carney is so angry or so determined now to face up to Trump, the reality of Trump, by going off and seeing if he can fight with Russia. All the logic is, in the NATO logic, the leaders of NATO are all saying that we have to unite against Russia. And this, meanwhile, you have Trump is actually pushing all this, with Mr. Root being a cheerleader for him, saying, as if you follow the latest in NATO, he says Trump has been the success of NATO because he's forced everybody to arm themselves. Arm themselves against whom? Russia. So we are, as a Russian general once told Gorbachev, we're losing or have lost World War II. I suppose the UN as an institution is going to disappear. I don't see any passion from Carney to keep it. So that brings us back to Blind Willie Johnson. And Pedro is going to take care of that. And 334578 is going to be coming up.
Well, if I had my way, if I had a whole week to find, if I had a large ass building down, well, I don't want a woman, fine, fair, a pleasant look, a cold black hair. All the gang goes down to mine. I first saw the woman, I look so fine. I went with Timothy, I can't tell. A daughter of Timothy, I play that well. I sound told his father, go in. If me, Lord, if I had my way, well, if I had a wicked one, if I had a long time building down, well, replied to him, can't you find a woman of your kind and kin? Samson, will you please your mother's mind? Go and marry Fatty for last time. Let me tell you what old Samson, well, he broke at the dawn, the lion run. Samson was the first man along the touch. He caught that lion, got up on his line. Hey, written that he killed a man with him. It's something that been hanging in the line of Joel. If I had my way, if I had